So we start with the American rule, you all know, which is each litigant pays his own attorney's fees, win or lose, unless the statute or contract provides otherwise. When fee shifting is authorized, the party seeking to recover fees bears the burden of establishing that the fees are both reasonable and necessary. We've always known that that is what we were going to have to prove up. And then in Rormos Venture, the April 2019 case, the court very clearly summarized it for us here, the standard for proving up fees in a fee-shifting context. In short, to secure an award of attorney's fees from an opponent, the prevailing party must prove, one, that the recovery of attorney's fees is legally authorized, and two, that the requested attorney's fees are reasonable and necessary for the legal representation, so that such an award will compensate the prevailing party generally for its losses resulting from the litigation process. So what is a prevailing party? Oftentimes when you're seeking fees under Chapter 3108, the statute tells us that the party must both recover on a cause of action and recover damages. But if you're not operating under Chapter 38, Rormos tells us that a prevailing party is one who obtains actual and meaningful relief that materially alters the party's legal relationship. In the Rormos case, the plaintiff had actually successfully defended against a breach of contract counterclaim, and the trial court rendered a take-nothing judgment in the plaintiff's favor as a counter-defendant. Therefore, the party was a prevailing party under the contract entitled to reasonable and necessary attorney's fees. What does it mean to be legally authorized to obtain fees? The award of attorney's fees and the ability to enforce it belongs to the party, not the attorney. The award is compensatory in nature. It's not a mechanism for improving the attorney's economic situation. That means that just because you and your client have contracted for a certain amount of money doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be awarded to you in a fee-shifting context if that amount is not reasonable and necessary. And three, to obtain attorney's fees in a fee-shifting situation, the party must be represented by an attorney. So reasonable and necessary. You have to prove both elements. And there are some statutes and contracts that will just use the term reasonable. The court said that distinction is immaterial. It's both. Every time you've got to prove both. Both elements are questions of fact. They have to be determined by the fact finder and act as limits on the amount of fees that the prevailing party can shift to the non-prevailing party. Again, the reason that you have to prove both reasonable and necessary is because fee awards are compensatory in nature, and they're intended to make the prevailing party whole as to reasonable and necessary fees for successfully prosecuting or defending against a claim. So how do you go about proving up that your fees, the fees that you seek, are reasonable and necessary? Which method do you use? The traditional, or AKA Arthur Anderson method, or the Lodestar method? Well, in Rormos, the court cleared this up for us and let us know these two seemingly different methods for evaluating claims for attorney's fees have created confusion for practitioners and courts alike. The Lodestar method developed as a shorthand version of the Arthur Anderson factors, and it was never intended to be a separate test or method. At this point, the court, in the Rormos opinion, the court says, let's take you through a little historical history of jurisprudence of attorney's fees in Texas. How did we get here? How do we get to the standard? And so they start in the federal courts. And the Fifth Circuit in 1974 laid out the Johnson factors for proving up whether attorney's fees were reasonable and necessary. I won't read all 12 factors to you. You should be fairly familiar with them because they're very similar to the Arthur Anderson factors, which I know you all know, except for the two highlighted ones, number 10 and 12, the undesirability of the case and awards in similar cases. Those are distinct to the federal practice. But the Johnson factors gave very little actual guidance to district courts, and setting attorney's fees by reference to a series of sometimes subjective factors placed unlimited discretion in trial judges and produced disparate results. So therefore, the Third Circuit developed the Lodestar method. And in 1973, we've got, this two-step method for determining a Lodestar amount. Step one, multiply the hours reasonably spent on the case by a reasonable hourly rate of compensation to form a base number or a Lodestar. Step two, adjust the Lodestar to account for whether the expenses incurred and hours invested were based on a contingent agreement, as well as the quality of the work performed, as evidenced by the recovery obtained and the complexity of the case. The Supreme Court refined the Lodestar method in subsequent cases in the early 1980s in Hensley and Bloom. And then in 2010, they affirmed that confirmed that the Lodestar method remains the method for proving attorneys' fees in federal court. In Purdue, the court stated, this method is not perfect, but it has several important virtues. One, it produces an award that roughly approximates the fee that the prevailing attorney would have received if he or she had been representing a client who was billed by the hour in a comparable case. And two, the method is readily administrable. It's objective, and it cabins the discretion of trial judges, permits meaningful judicial review, and produces reasonably predictable results. So now we get to Texas jurisprudence. And Texas also started with a factor-based method for proving whether attorneys' fees were reasonable and necessary. So like Johnson, Arthur Anderson in 1997 identified 8 non-exclusive factors to guide the fact finder. These are the factors that you're familiar with: time and labor required, novelty and difficulty of questions involved, and skill required to perform legal services properly. Likelihood that acceptance of particular employment will preclude other employment by a lawyer, fee customarily charged in the locality for similar legal services, amount involved and results obtained, time limitations imposed by client or by circumstances, nature and length of professional relationship with client, experience, reputation, and ability of lawyers performing services, and whether the fee is fixed or contingent on results obtained or uncertainty of collection of evidence before the legal services have been rendered.